Now, more and more, you're getting into that terrible illusion. Now, cut it out. Can't fool around with illusions here. We're going to have to strip away the gauze of dream. Get down into that hardcore realism. That little seed of actuality that lies there within every single action that each one of the long spinning hours that we are conscious in this day and time in the 20th century. You're ready to stand up and look at it, eh? Well, let me tell you, I don't know, sometimes you wonder, well, what is next? What next? I mean, for crying out loud, what next? Really, what next? I'm reading the Newark Evening News. Sitting there, I'm sitting in the train going to Philadelphia, and there's a Newark Evening News under the seat there, and I pick it up and I start going through it. Sunday, January 13th, 1963. Now what next? Listen to this one. West Palm Beach, Florida. United Press International. Strong new protests were voiced yesterday against a plan to give 100 free green trading stamps to each person who registers to vote in Palm Beach County. It's shocking and in bad taste, declared Republican County Chairman Max J. Stark. I don't think it's American. Loretta Culligan, an employee at the county registration office, was fired Friday because she refused to go along with the plan. It's unethical, undignified, and against my beliefs, she said. The plan officially goes into effect January 25th. Republicans are up in arms over the idea. Democrats are all for the plan, since they hope it will attract more voters to help fight off the growing Republican strength in the county. They're hoping to up the ante to 200 stamps for every registered Democrat. I foresee the day when they will give green stamps and plaid stamps and King Cole stamps and purple stamps for just being a nice guy. You know? Or you'll get 7 stamps for being friendly. You'll get 15 stamps for being nice. You'll get 22 stamps for being sweet. And then you'll get maybe 45 stamps for being a gentleman. I'm just curious what kind of fascinating propaganda could be made overseas about the idea that Americans have to be given green stamps to vote. And it'll happen. You know, speaking of what's next, I was reading something the other day that makes you wonder. You know, there's so much talk of love today. People, in fact, the other day I happened to be in a place where there were a lot of playwrights, and they were doing a play, a little one-act play, and I was watching this play, and it was beginning to bug me, you know, and finally after I reached a certain point, I turned to the guy next to me, who was a playwright, and I says, you know, I'm really getting tired of this business of every play I see where love is the universal solvent. It's like the great universal alchemic chemical compound that the ancient alchemists were looking for centuries. It was, you know, the concept of the universal solvent. The solvent that will dissolve anything, you know, the old philosophical concept. What would you keep it in, you know? Well, you know about that. There's been this old, it's one of those old philosophical conundrums. I don't want to start the Long John bit here. I mean, sit here all night long and discuss if you invented the universal solvent, what would you keep it in? And then, of course, you put it into this thing. And, of course, in the end, the usual concept is, and there is some truth to it, if you did invent the universal solvent, it would destroy everything. It'd have to, you know. You got this jug of universal solvent. Next thing you know, no jug. Well, it slops out on the floor. No floor. Dissolves the floor. Well, then it drops down on the ground. No ground. I mean, it's dissolved the ground. Next thing you know, no earth. Nothing but a big ball of universal solvent flying around. Well, this literally might be just what's happening to love, you know. The universal solvent. It's gnawing away at everything. Well, I sat there watching this play, you see, and I says the guy, finally, it began to bug me, you know, I suspect one day somebody in a play is going to show up with a good, really a solid case of gangrene. And about the end of the third act, the doctor is going to come around. He's going to take a look at it. He says, well, I think he's not long for this world. He's got to go. And somebody's going to jump up and say, we haven't tried it yet, Doc. And he said, well, that's true. That's extreme, but we'll try it. And so they all gather around, and they love this poor son of a gun for about 25 minutes. And then he's going to leap up, run around. He's going to draw his stomach in, take a big, deep breath, and go off swinging. The stars and stripes floating in the breeze behind him. Because love, it really is believed in the American theater that love will do it. I guess this is based on, and I said to this guy, I finished the conversation, I said to him, I said, you know, this is beginning to bug me. I mean, this business of love, the universal sovereign, curing everything. This playwright looked at me. It's kind of a British playwright. He looked at me and he says, I'll tell you how he looked. He looked like, if you can imagine, you know how Jack Benny's look is? Well, if you can imagine Jack Benny's look without the look in the eye. It's as if Jack Benny's got a bad tooth. This guy looks at me. It's a long, pregnant pause. He says, well, doesn't it cure everything? I said, well, no, actually, no, I don't think so. Well, that's your opinion. I just sat there and looked out into the middle distance. Speaking of universal love, this is WOR AM and FM, New Yorkie, and we'll be here until, you know. Well, I was thinking about this, and it occurred to me that since this is true, we believe that love is going to cure everything. I think one of the great dangers of the belief is that it takes our minds off the things that really do destroy us. Because I guess what we generally think is that love will cancel them out. Do you really believe that love cancels out hate? Or are you more realistic and realize that love and hate exist simultaneously in the same person and usually at an equal level? In short, you give a guy a good shot of love, that does not necessarily erase the hate. As a matter of fact, it doesn't, because it still exists. We never look at the hate, hardly. Well, on the other hand, if you concentrate on love, you begin to lose your concentration on the hate, you see. What I'm saying here, I suppose, is that if we concentrated more on hate and less on love, maybe love itself would happen. But I don't know. As an old student of hate, having seen it around in a lot of ways, I'll never forget one time when I was a kid. Speaking of hate, I really saw. Well, hate, you know, part of hate is violence. Of course, violence is one of the great mediums for man to work in. And one time when I was a kid, I guess it was the first time I ever saw anything like this, you know. Grown-ups are grown-ups to you. You know, you're a kid, and they're grown-up people. Well, of course, fistfights on the schoolyard are one thing. There's another kind that is not that other thing. It's a very different other thing. Well, one day I'm coming home from school, and there was this tavern. And every day I go past this tavern. And, you know, you pay no attention to the tavern. Just went past there every day, and they had a big knee-high sign in the window, you know, and that whole... You could hardly see in the tavern. You know how taverns always have sort of curtains, and they have big placards and stuff that advertise beers and that. They kind of hide the customers away from the light. And I suspect the light, the customers themselves want to get away from it, you know. It's all part of the escape mechanism, you know. And so they're hiding in this little hole, and every day I'm going past there and paying very little attention to it. Well, one day I'm coming past from school, and I'm about, maybe 75 or 100 feet away from this place, and pow, the door flies open just like that. You know, I'm a kid. And this guy comes sailing out. It was a real, you know, grown-up man type. He comes whistling out on the sidewalk. He spins about four times in midair, and he lands right on his neck and slides across over to the curb and jumps up running, you see. He tears right back into this joint, shoom, like that. Well, I'm walking along. I'm wowie, you know. I'm a kid. Whoo! And I'm all eyeballs watching this thing. He goes, poop, like that. Into the door he goes. And then, pow, the door flies. Oh, wow, this guy comes sailing out. And he lands on his back in the dirt. He jumps up again, whoop, into the door. Well, there's a brief pause, one of those really pregnant pauses. It hangs there in the air like a big old watermelon. And I'm about, maybe 20 feet from it now. When suddenly the door opens for the final time, boom, like that, and two guys come out, and they are entangled like a Gordian knot. You never saw anything like it. They come sailing out in midair, both of them. Pow! They land on the sidewalk, and they jump up, and they are belting. Well, now, these are grown-up men, you know. I'm looking at two grown-up guys, and they're really wailing at each other. They're belting, you know. One, pow, and you see a tooth flies out. Pow, and the guy with a tooth, he belts the other guy. Pow, and the blood flies out the guy's nose. Pow, another tooth. And then pow, a tooth. Pow, boy, up and down they go. Really, you know, it's funny. You watch these cowboy fights. And the cowboy fights look kind of fun, you know. You see in these westerns, they're hitting each other with bottles. Have you ever noticed that nobody gets hit on the head with a bottle? And have you ever noticed that the blood never squirts out, you know, nothing? Nobody gets cut with those bottles. Well, I don't know, you know. Well, this is what happened. I'm watching this thing, you see. And, oh, of course, I'm a kid now. I'm watching a fight. Never have I seen an adult fight in my life. Pow! Ooh, ooh. You know, the guy gets up. Pow! And a face, pow, and I'm standing there. Wow, I'm sort of reeling back. Well, without any warning, about four more guys came rushing out of the tavern, and they're all yelling at each other. Of course, one, there's a side routine. One guy's yelling, Well, it just started to spread out all over the sidewalk. There must have been about seven guys belting away there, and there were teeth and ears. There was a foot laying on the street there. There was a hat, an old cigar. It was a terrible mess going on there. Well, one of them somehow got thrown through the window of the tavern. Somebody grabbed this guy, and he went reeling backwards, and the knee-high orange sign comes flying down. The neon sign comes down, and it was really getting messy. It was just wild, and I'm standing there with my mouth hanging open, you know. I'm liable to be sucked into this thing any minute now just by centrifugal force, you know, just by the gigantic vacuum of stuff going there. Well, I can hear coming in the distance, it's coming, you know, woo, woo. By that time, there's about 50 guys standing around the sidewalk, and it's like the whole tavern has emptied out now. Everybody is out there. Bottles, the whole thing, and they're belting it out. The White Sox fans and the Cub fans and the Democrats and the Republicans and the Socialists and the Union men and the scabs. Everybody's hitting each other, and all the old hates are coming out. Some guy's hollering about the Catholics, I can hear in the middle of the argument. Some guy's hollering about the Protestants, and other guy's hollering about the Democrats. And, I mean, everything that everybody hates everybody else is coming out, you know, and it's all totally relevant to the fight, and they're belting away, and another tooth flies. Well, I'm watching. By that time, you know, I'm up to the top of my tennis shoes in blood and gore and hate and everything else, you know. I'm cheering, and all the guys are yelling. Well, the paddy wagon arrives, and about 17 of the toughest, of South Chicago's toughest, come leaping out of the cab. You know, out of the front, out of the back, these guys jump out, and they got their billies going, thump, thump, pow. They're asking no questions. You ought to see a real flying squad go into action. When they see the blood going, they ask no questions. They just start belting. Pump, you thump. Ah, you cock, rah, rah. They're grabbing guys by the back of the neck. And each guy, there was one guy who must have been 7 feet tall, Ed, who was standing in the middle of it all, and he's passing them out. He's grabbing each guy by the back of the head, pump, pump. He hits him twice on the noggin, and he passes them out to his buddies. It was like a bucket brigade. He's passing them out, and each guy grabs one and throws him into the wagon. You know, pump, pow, pump, pow. And two more other cops have worked around to the other side, and they're herding them in. It was beautiful to watch. They're boxing him in, you know, plump, thump. And the guy in the middle, it's just like a guy in a rodeo or something, or a roundup. These other two cops are wading them in towards him, and he's belting them as they come, one after the other, one after the other. Must have been about 15 guys in the wagon, and each guy is getting quieted down by this cop as he comes to him. Well, finally, the last guy is in the paddy wagon, and I'm standing there knee-deep in ears and feet and shoes, the whole business, you know. And one of the cops comes over to me. And by this time, the guy in the bar, very interesting thing, the guy in the bar is still in the bar, still swabbing the bar with his mop, with his cloth, you know, looking very innocent. He's putting out more peanuts on the bar. He's walking in there. And they're going to get nothing out of him. He doesn't know what happened. Oh, I don't know what happened. The bounty of the bar, they're yelling the next thing, fight. I don't know. He doesn't want to have any trouble. So the cop comes over to me, and he says, "Did you see anything, kid?" And I said, "Yes, I did." And I'm just a kid, about 12 or 13. I says, "Yes, I'm scared to death by now." And this guy is towering over me. He says, "Tell me exactly what you saw." I said, well, a guy flew out of the window there. And he says, guy, which guy flew out of the window? Show, point the guy out that flew out first. I said, well, I don't know. So they open up the back of the paddy wagon, and here these guys are sitting in there. There's about 13 guys all lined up in there with their ears hanging, you know. Every one of them had eyes that looked like tennis balls, you know, and they're all looking in there, and their ties are all torn, their shirts are ripped off, and all kinds of beer on their head and everything. And I'm looking in there, and the guy says, which one? Well, I'm looking at these monsters, you know, and here there's 13 guys all sort of looking out at me. Which one, kid? Now, which one first? I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, one of them did. Now, which was the first guy that came out? Now, which one? These guys are now shutting up. They're saying nothing. All I could hear was the sound of blood dripping once in a while, blump. And then occasionally, I'd hear a moan, you know. He says, which one? Now, tell me which one. I said, I don't know. He says, now, look, kid. Now, tell me which one. I don't know. Well, I'm getting scared to death because you can't tell them apart. You know, it's like one hamburger, like one ball of raw hamburger looks like the same, you know? I said, I don't know. He says, okay. And with that, he gets into the back of the wagon and he puts his billy in his belt. This big son of a gun. He puts the billy in the belt and he looks out of there. He says, kid, quit hanging around taverns. Looks right at me. Don't hang around taverns. Bang. They slam the door. Woo! Away they go. I have never forgotten that advice. Never. Nor have I forgotten the scene. And this is the side of man that nobody ever talks about. This has nothing to do with established hate or anything else. It's just a thing that explodes like a shot out of the dark. Ed, listen to this one now. I think this tells, again, this is one of those little floating straw in the dark, you know. Listen, Norfolk, Virginia, United Press International. Two men shot and killed each other today in what police said was a duel to settle an argument over who would close the door. The victims, Percy Lawrence and Roy Lee Seegers, shared a room at the building where the shootings took place. Witnesses told police the two men argued over closing a door, and Lawrence pulled a .38 caliber revolver, police special. Seegers told him, okay, wait here till I get my shotgun. When both men were armed, they looked at each other for a moment, and then they opened fire. Lawrence, with the .38, fired five shots, one after the other. Only one bullet struck Seeger. The blast from Seeger's only shot struck Lawrence full in the face. Both men died shortly after they were in the hospital. From Vienna, guards at a Vienna hospital suspicious of patient Heinrich Mandel's claims that any enemy attack on my room will be met by heavy fire from all sides, entered his room yesterday and found 5 machine guns, 36 rifles, 61 pistols, and 5,000 bullets. Radio Saigon, with its usual bent for creating picturesque names for military operations, the South Vietnamese government announced the opening of a new one yesterday. Major military operation. The operation will be entitled Operation Waves of Love. Other and more successful previous operations have been called Beautiful Sunrise, Blue Mountain, Big Pacification, Sea Swallow, and People's Love Move. from Budapest. January 27th, Mrs. Janos Hobos, 27-year-old Budapest housewife, has been executed for the poison murderers of five persons she used as test victims before trying to dispose of her husband, reports a Budapest newspaper. The paper said Mrs. Hobos wanted to make sure the poison was potent enough to kill her mate, but she was arrested before she could try it on him after five test victims had died using her poison. She said, when finally questioned by police, "I wanted to make sure it would really do it." From New Jersey, a Camden man whose nose was bitten off in a brutal attack by an unknown assailant is in satisfactory condition. Jerome Haywood was driving in Collingswood when another car forced his to the side of the road. In the course of the assault which followed, Henwood, a machinist, lost part of his nose and narrowly escaped when the assailant tried to run him down with his car. Police gave this account of the incident. On Collings Avenue near the White Horse Pike, a car with Delaware license plates, for some reason or other, unknown at this time, began forcing Henwood's car off of the pavement. The harassment continued unabated for several blocks, and finally Henwood's car came to a halt, according to police. Henwood and the unidentified driver in the car with Delaware tags, police said, started to argue. During the course of the brawl, the Delaware man forced his thumb into Henwood's mouth and then proceeded to bite his nose. As the Delaware man started to drive off, he tried to run Henwood down with his car, witnesses told police. But Henwood jumped aside and received only a glancing blow as the car sped away. Flora Jean Cole, a tiny 16-year-old blonde, was the lead singer in the Reverend Leroy Daniels Choir at the church in Tatum, Texas. That was the only known association between the 27-year-old recently married minister and the 90-pound honor student who had never been out on a date with a boy alone, according to her mother. When the girl disappeared from home, her parents sought consolation from the Reverend Dr. Daniels. "Then we found out he was gone, too," Mrs. Roy Cole said yesterday. A waitress at an all-night cafe in Henderson, Texas, said she observed the couple during the early morning hours following the girl's disappearance. They ordered scrambled eggs. The parents filed charges against the minister. Mrs. Mary Dell Daniels, the minister's bride of 4 months, is now in the hospital. She works there as a nurse. When it comes to foreign coins, collector Louis P. Maloney, 727 of Brooklyn, is a sorehead. Louis, while visiting a friend in a fourth-floor apartment on 2nd Street, somehow dropped three Mexican coins down a bathroom sink drain. When he was unable to retrieve them, according to the detective sergeant, he lost his temper, grabbed a hatchet, and smashed the sink, chopped up the bathroom tile, broke two windows, and most significantly, ruptured a water pipe, unloosing a torrent of water which poured through the apartment, over the floor, cascading into apartments on the lower three floors, and caused damage estimated at over $1,000. He never got the coins back. The seventh-month pregnant wife of a traveling salesman in San Diego today faced 5 years in prison following her conviction of plotting to electrocute her husband with a rigged electric toothbrush. He said, "I still love her."
I think it will help circulation. The Reverend Kenneth Tovey in a Teddington, England church has recently put a very interesting cheesecake photo on front of his parish magazine. I think, he said, it will help circulation.
Philadelphia, David Baum, Jr., of 19th Street, holder of a top good citizenship award for youth and former Edison High School cross-country runner, was held without bail Friday on holdup and burglary charges. Police said Baum received his Good Citizenship Award from a community center for outstanding contributions to the youth of the community. What next? Oh, well, one thing we've got next. Let's see. We've got a show commercial. And if you don't know anything about show, I'd suggest you pick up that is inside of us. There's a really interesting thing that lays down there. Sometimes it's dormant, other times it isn't. And I am inclined to believe that this side of us is literally equally distributed. A lot of people feel that we can educate ourselves out of being human or love ourselves out of being what we are. Somehow people seem to fall into this thing, and I'm not, you know, I'm just very skeptical about that. That the thing that is in you that is a destructive creature, I mean a wildly predatory creature, literally a predator. You know, man, if you judge man by the standards of all the other mammals on the face of the globe, man is by far the most destructive predator the world knows. By far. There's just nothing that comes anywhere near us. You can think of the worst animal you can think of, and they're not in our league. Now, when you talk of predator, we do something that no other predator does. We work on each other, too. That's a very interesting kind of predator. It's a very rare thing when one lion attacks another for other than purely basic reasons. Purely basic reasons. And even then, it's a rare thing. Especially if it goes to the death. But man continually does this. It's a very intriguing, very, very intriguing side of our nature. Now, it's also a side of our nature that we rarely even look at. We like to talk about doing something about it because I think we all secretly know that nothing really can be done about it. And it's intriguing that there is a feeling today among a lot of people that anarchy is a way out. I've heard more and more people calling themselves an anarchist. Jules Pfeiffer often says he's an anarchist, he's a philosophical anarchist. And that's an intriguing thing because if you really take a look at man, you will find that this strange social structure which most of us fight against, the social structure itself, is what really keeps us from being the predator that many of us are. It's the one thing that stops it, you know. And yet, the people who are anarchists will often say that they want to do away with the structure that keeps the predator from really being the predator. Really being the predator. Wow. I mean, you know, I'm curious what sharks would think of us as a destructive creature. Very curious. I'd like to know what a passel of lions would think of man as a destructive creature, as a predator. Oh, boy. Let me tell you, there isn't a creature anywhere on the face of the earth that isn't afraid of people. And with good reason. What? I can't hear you. Oh, well, people have every right to be afraid of people. Because people have proven them. Because, you see, I think the reason people are afraid of other people is because they seek what they know about themselves. And so naturally they cut a wide berth around anything else because they know about that awful saber-toothed tiger that lies next to their spleen. Deep down inside, boy, ready to go. I think that love is not the universal solvent, and as a matter of fact, I'm often inclined to wonder. Somebody once wrote a great line about love. It says Americans really hung on love. In fact, he says he wonders whether anybody would ever fall in love if they hadn't read about it first. which is an interesting concept, you know. On the other hand, I don't think we have to read about killing to be killers. Another way to put it, you know. And sometimes a saber-toothed tiger has rubber teeth, which is all right. Other times he just gums his victims, you know, which is another way of putting it, too. But then again, I suppose there are times when... But then, on the other hand, you should just learn to keep your knees loose, you know, play the back court well as you can, and concentrate a little on defense. Your offense is fine. Should try doing something about those backboards.